You too may find yourself leaving with something extra in your pocket. That might be some extra cash when you shop on Amazon.com. Get the best deals on everything you need and help support Rob as a podcast whenever you start your Amazon shopping with our link, robhasawebsite.com/Amazon, or for our friends in Canada, it's robhasawebsite.com/AmazonCA. Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here with our Exit Interview podcast. And this is twice in 48 hours for me on the Exit Interview podcast after we talked to Debbie on Tuesday. This week, we are going to be back in our regular slot to talk to Scott Pollard, who got voted out of the game in spectacular fashion last night in a very, very exciting episode where Ty did not use the Super Idol to save him. We will talk about all that and much more with Scott here today on the Exit Interview podcast. Very fun, regular know-it-alls, not in-person know-it-alls, with Stephen Fishback episode number 102 of the Survivor Know-It-Alls with Stephen Fishback. That's up on robhasawebsite.com. Then later on today, we're going to have Shireen from Worlds Apart and from Cambodia. She's going to be here joining me in the studio, and then your voicemails with Scott Green. Make sure you don't miss any of it by subscribing to the podcast. Go to robhasawebsite.com/iTunes or search RJP in your favorite podcatcher. All right, I see that we have Scott here on the line. Let's go ahead and patch him in. Scott, are you there?
Hi, Rob.
Hey, Scott. Good morning. How are you?
Great. Wow, you have an amazing microphone.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Scott. Thank you for noticing.
It sounds like I'm in a studio with you.
Yes. All right. Well, Scott, excited to be talking to you after a very exciting episode of the show. Maybe not so much for you, but really exciting stuff that happened. I have to know, what was your reaction? Because it seemed like that you took it very well in terms of Ty not giving you the Super Idol or not using the Super Idol on you. Was there more to that that we didn't see where, like, I would have been, no, seriously, come on, Ty, use the idol.
Well, I know Ty really well. I formed a really good bond with him, and I'm not a beggar, I guess. When it happened, I was just in shock. I was completely blindsided. I thought for sure we had a close enough relationship that he would have shared it, and what was going through my mind was that the only reason he still had an idol was because of me, so I figured, you know, he owed me that much. Not that he owed me his idol, but just the fact that he still had it. I thought there was a really good chance that he would share it because, you know, he seemed to still remember and be appreciative of the fact that he wouldn't have an idol if I hadn't talked him out of using it earlier in the game. So that was surprising to me, and I was shocked, and there was no reason to be begging him for it or come on, man. You know, like, I could see it in his eyes. He wasn't going to share. So I just took the loss and walked out, and I don't have any hard feelings towards Ty. He did what he thought was best for his game moving forward.
Yeah, I'd still be there. I'd be like, come on, are you sure? Are you sure you don't want to use it on me? Jeff, hold on. Just give us 1 second here. There's a slight misunderstanding. Then in terms of you having Jason's idol, which it turned out to be such a crazy thing that you walked out with it after the tribal council, was that your idea that you say, hey, let me hold on to the idol? Or does Jason say to you, here, you take the idol, I've got the necklace, and then we all have something tonight?
It was the latter. Jason had the immunity, and he just, as a sign of trust, just handed it to me. He said, here, I don't need this. You may need it tonight. And that way, Ty had an idol, I had an idol, and Jason had immunity. So we felt very good about moving into the tribal with that security blanket, I guess, all the way around.
Now, something that we've tried to wrap our heads around on the outside talking about this game is, how much do the other players, like the women and Joe, how much did they know about how the Super Idol worked? Because during the episodes that you guys, you and Jason, had said that the other people don't know how it works, but people like Debbie in Exit interviews have said they did know how it works. So from what you understand, did everybody have an understanding of how it all was going to happen?
I don't know who knew what. To my knowledge, the only people that read the instructions were Neil, Jason. I guess Sydney and Alicia kind of heard parts of the instructions when we found the original idol and Braun, and Ty. Mm-hmm. So outside of that, I don't know that anybody else actually read the instructions and knew how the Super Idol worked. So I don't know, but it's funny you mentioned that, like, say Debbie knew what was going on. Debbie says a lot of things. So we don't know exactly what's going to come out of her mouth next, but To my knowledge, I don't know that anybody had a clear understanding of how the Super Auto works, but Ty did his best to blow it and talk about it at that one tribal council. So, you know, I guess people that didn't know about it or didn't understand it got a little bit of an education on it when Ty opened his mouth.
Now, was there any talk about you guys using the hidden immunity idols as regular idols instead of the Super Idol? Because you had one and Ty had one. If it was going to get used anyway, did you guys even talk about maybe, hey, let's just play these before the votes get read?
Well, there was two discussions. One was, yes, why don't we just do that? That way we're safe. And the immediate answer, I believe, if I remember correctly from Ty, was, I don't want to use it if I don't have to. And that made sense. So from there, we thought, oh, okay, well, you know, that does make sense. Well, let's just re-rack what we did last week. Let's make a lot of noise and try to intimidate them and scare them into voting off yet another one of their own, like they did with Debbie. And then we may luck out of this and not have to use our idols again and keep them. So that was the thought process. That was what we ultimately decided, that it was smarter to only use them if we needed them, because there's no way they can split the vote and get both of us out.
Could we talk a little bit about Ty and his decision to end up defecting from you guys? In sort of looking back on this, have you felt like that you guys didn't give Ty enough ownership in the alliance? And because from what it seemed in the episode, he felt like that you and Jason were calling all the shots and he didn't really have a voice in that alliance of three.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if he perceives that, I have to accept it as truth. But I know for a fact I had a lot of side conversations with Ty, just like, you know, everybody does. You talk with your alliance and then you talk with individuals also. We took a lot of long walks on the beach, me and my little Ty buddy, and I thought for sure that he felt comfortable with how things were going. I think it was unfair for him to say he didn't feel like he had a voice, because I definitely am a communicator, and I believe that I was listening to him and in fact trying to let him control, or feel like he was in control of, at least of the relationship that him and I had, because that's kind of how I was playing the whole game, is trying to make sure that people I was in an alliance with felt like they were in control and I was just along for the ride. Again, perception is reality. So if he perceived that he didn't have a voice, then that's how he felt. But I don't think for a second that he was left out of any discussions. He was very much involved in the discussions. And I even took him aside at the point after the one that they showed the three of us sitting on the shoreline. I remember taking him aside after and just saying, hey man, are you good with this? What do you feel? Are you good? You know, do you like this idea? So I think it was very much an equal partnership, but again, I can't speak for Ty.
Did you guys have any sort of an inkling that he was having some sort of moral dilemma with some of the stuff that you guys were doing to sabotage the camp during the last week's episode?
Well, at first, yeah, he expressed some hesitation about it. He said, no, that's not. And I said, yeah, well, this isn't in my nature either, Ty. I'm a provider for my family in real life, and I love giving to other people. That's how I am in my real life, too. But this is not real life. This is Survivor. We're playing for $1 million. And, you know, if you look at it from that point of view, maybe you'll see things differently, but certainly not trying to tell you that you have to agree with the way I'm looking at it. And then he sneaks out in the middle of the night and puts fire out. So, that to me showed that he was on board. And I never saw, and honestly, didn't believe him when he told us that he did it. I didn't believe him until I saw it on TV. And I've hung out with him since the game. I've broken bread with him and talked with him. And I like Ty. But I still didn't believe that he had actually put the fire out until I saw it on TV.
Now, going back to the sabotage from last week's episode, a lot of the viewers really did not like that sort of thing being in the game. Did you feel like that it ultimately did have the strategic benefit of being able to get people to not vote for the Alliance of Three last week? Or was that completely chalked up to having those idols?
I think it was both. I think that when you get people on their heels, they don't make otherwise decisions in a rational manner that they would otherwise make. Mm-hmm. So I think it was consistent pressure that they were feeling that we were not feeling, that I think made the idol shakeup and the rock, paper, scissors more effective at tribal, because there was just consistent pressure on, well, what's this, why are they doing this? And what, they're jerks, or whatever they were thinking and feeling about us. They were not thinking rationally like they otherwise may have about the situation or what was going on. We had everything been normal in camp, and we tried to ingratiate ourselves back with them, their good graces, and bowed down and said, okay, you know, hey, we just want to stick around, or however people outside the game or even they would have preferred us to act. Or, you know, I'll take ownership of my own character. There's a lot of people that have a voice on social media that sit there and judge, oh, you should have done this or you should have done that. Well, I didn't. I played it my way, and I don't have a problem with it.
Going back to the stuff with Julia from last night, where you guys were telling Julia, hey, we're going to vote out Ty. We want to take you to the final three. Are you guys being sincere to Julia in that moment, or are you guys just telling her what she needs to hear to keep her on your side?
Both. I think that had it gone to a final three with Jason and Ty and myself, I think we would have had a much harder time of actually maybe convincing somebody other than Ty to win the money. I think with Julia, I feel like I could have made an argument that strategically my game was better. I was a better social player and a better physical player, even though I never won an immunity challenge. I felt like I had a better argument. So it was a little bit of telling her what she needed to hear, because we definitely wanted to reassure her that that her plans were in our future. But I also felt like I actually maybe had a chance of winning against her, as opposed to if Ty was in that final three. So there was some honesty there and some strategy.
One of the things that I've really had a hard time trying to figure out over these last couple of weeks is how closely is Julia working with you guys? Because I've sort of heard it both ways in terms of the exit interviews and what we've seen on the show, where it looks like Julia is talking with you guys about the plan of, hey, we want to flush Ty's idol tonight. We're putting the votes on Ty. And it seems like that you guys are on board. But if Julia is working with you guys, and perhaps Michelle too, why not all vote together as five and either take out Aubrey or Sydney at that vote?
There was the Michelle, Aubrey, Sydney dynamic to be dealt with, that though Julia felt her commitment to Michelle was very deep, she kind of sensed that Michelle wasn't going to turn on the Girls Alliance. She was more affected by the sabotage emotionally, whereas Julia saw more of a gameplay and strategy in it. And really, from what I've watched, I really liked the way that Julia was playing the game in person, but also from what I'm watching on edit and her testimonials, she seems to be the only one that's playing with her head right now of all of us, because she's seeing who she wants to sit next to in the final two or three, and she's sitting there going, well, I can beat Jason and Scott. So she's sticking as close as she can to us while trying to maintain an alliance with the girls. I think she's using her head, and I think she's playing a great game so far.
What ended up going wrong with Sydney after the merge? Because it looked like that the three of you were so tight coming out of the original Braun tribe. But then when you guys get to the swap, she ends up feeling like maybe Nick is getting closer with you guys, and it seems like there's a falling out between you and she with Jason. So what was it ultimately that was the reason that she wanted to flip away from you guys?
I got betrayed by everybody I was in an alliance with. It started with Jason. He was the first one. So the fact that I made it to Final Eight is actually shocking to me. But anyway, she did exactly what I told Jason she would do right off the bat. I said, you don't trust a 23-year-old. She's a bodybuilder. I get it. You get it. But you got Jenny, who's 39. I'm trusting age over youth, man. I know that she freaked out in the tribal council, but don't do it. Don't get rid of her. And he did anyway. And you know, that was rough for me, because I figured that she was going to do what she did. And Sydney played nice and played like she liked us. But I could tell that as soon as she had the chance to jump, she was going to jump. And the only thing she didn't do, to my knowledge so far, is spill the beans about Jason's idol to everybody. But I don't know. We didn't see that. But I didn't see her. That's the only thing she didn't do to betray us right off the bat, was tell everybody else that she had an idol, that Jason had an idol. But, you know, again, just saw her as a person and what she was going to do. And I ended up being right. I didn't want to be right, but I ended up being right. I sensed it, that she was going to jump ship as soon as she could. And she just did what she was doing. And again, no personal hard feelings in real life about it. It's just, I sensed that's how she was going to play the game. And she did exactly what I thought she was going to do. And I told Jason a lot. I'm never going to let him live that down. I mean, we joke about it.
Yeah. Scott, real quick, because we're starting to run out of time. We spent a lot of time talking with people on social media and on the podcast about how the whole Alicia thing ended up coming across. Do you have any regrets or thoughts about how that all went down back in how it was happening in real life or how it was depicted on the show?
No. In the show, there were a lot of olive branches extended and attempts to be cool with her, to be civil, and those were rebuffed. And even at her tribal council where she was eliminated from the game, Jeff asked me as a father to see if I could reach her. I mean, it was like he wanted to have a Dr. Phil moment almost. Mm-hmm. And you know, I talked to her like a father, and she just didn't want to hear it. You know, I really honestly did try to speak to her, and she was like, well, that's just your opinion. That's just your opinion and whatever. You know, I don't want to listen to anything you have to say. And then it crossed over into reality. Then at that point, it's like, okay, this girl just doesn't want to listen to anyone or anything. Then at that point you just go, okay, yeah, you're hard headed. You don't want to hear anything. You think everybody's out to get you when the game's over for you. And I was still trying to connect with you and just say, hey, you know, this isn't real life. This is a game, and we voted you out because you didn't want to get along with anybody. You didn't, you thought you were cool with Sydney, and she was tolerating you just like the rest of us. But it turned into something where she tried to create a social media storm, because the edit showed Jason and I in a villainous manner. And tried to make things up about us or say things about us that just aren't true. So, hey, I don't have any hard feelings towards her. She's not my type of person. I don't think we're going to be hanging out in our personal lives anytime ever. But I don't expect any fireworks at the finale. I mean, it's not about her and it's not about me. It's about the show of Survivor.
Yeah. Hey, Scott, thank you so much for coming on. And by the way, that your Ponderosa video, I thought was especially touching, especially when you get those letters from your family. I hope the whole situation with your mom is going okay. And I think that if people haven't checked that out, definitely should watch the Ponderosa video from this week.
Oh, thank you very much. It's ongoing, you know, health issues. It's an expensive proposition to die in America. So there's always issues. So we always keep our heads up and do what we can.
Okay, Scott, thanks so much for coming on with me today.
Thanks a lot for having me.
All right, take care. Bye. Everybody, there you have it. Scott Pollard here on the podcast, and good job by Scott coming on and doing the exit press. And again, I'm always impressed with anybody that has, you know, any these people that are from celebrity or the world of sports and stuff like that when they do the exit press, because there are people like Jimmy Johnson didn't end up doing any of the exit press, or he just did like a conference call with everybody. So good job by Scott going out there and doing all of the press for Survivor, which obviously he does not have to do if he really does not want to. So thanks so much to Scott for coming on the podcast. All right, let's go ahead and go back into the archives once again to talk about what's coming up this week, or what had already happened this week in Survivor history, with our good buddy Jordan Kalish. Jordan, are you there?
I am here, Rob. How's it going?
Very good. Jordan, if you had a super idol, would you save me?
I would.
You would, even if it meant giving up your own immunity idol?
Well, if it came down to saving either you or Fishback, I might save Fishback, but I think I would save you.
Yeah. Aren't you excited when you witness Survivor history in the making that maybe sometime in the year 2026, you'll be talking about this with Dominic about what an exciting moment this was?
Wait, why is Dominic taking over in 2026?
That's when I'm retiring.
You're retiring in 2026?
Yes.
Dominic, how old is he going to be then?
In 2026, I guess he'll only be 13, but he'll be
that's old enough to podcast. I mean, Aaron Kalish Glassman, my cousin, podcasted at around 13, so I guess it's possible.
Okay, maybe Jordan Parhar is the host of Robin's podcast by then.
I could see that. That would be Jordan squared.
Okay. All right. So a very exciting episode tonight and looking forward to this. But first, let me just take a moment and tell you that this week in Survivor History is sponsored by our friends over at AeroCart, the AeroCart by Wix. It's the 8-in-1 all-purpose carrier. Works is reinventing lifting and hauling with the new Works AeroCart. But boy, with this 8-in-1 AeroCart, just think of all the things, all the This Week in Survivor History segments that you could load up into this thing.
Oh, man, that sounds amazing. All the This Week in Survivor Histories, you could put like 500 super idols on it.
Sure. Because it's like having a wheelbarrow, a trailer mover, and a dolly all in one. And with the patented turbo lift technology, it makes lifting 200 pounds feel like you're lifting just 17 pounds. Boy, just like Scott Pollard was lifted right out of the game by Ty, that with the power of not using that super idol, that's what you'll be. I mean, Scott Pollard is what? He was 300 pounds.
Yeah, I know he was NBA center. Those guys are huge, but the AeroCart could still lift him.
Yeah, with two oversized wheels, even awkward loads stay balanced, so you'll never strain your back, which is important. And you could see all sorts of different clips of people lifting heavy bags of topsoil, gravel, even a refrigerator without any help. You could see that all in action at works.com. That's WORX.com. It's turned me into a move it all, lift it all, haul it all, know it all. So go to aerocart.com, enter promo code RHAP at checkout to receive free shipping. And how about this? 10% off. It's like getting a hidden immunity idol and an advantage all in one. 10% off the free shipping. That's at aerocart.com, AeroCart.com, and receive free shipping plus 10% off at checkout. All right, Jordan, let's get into this. What do you want to talk about this week?
All right, Rob, tonight on This Week in Survivor History, I have no questions. I just have statements because we're going all the way to April 20th, 2420, which is 16 years ago last night, so Wednesday. This is the Snakes and Rats speech from Survivor Borneo. And when we decided that we were going to talk about Borneo this season, this is really the episode that I was very excited about getting into. Not only the episode, but just this 3-minute speech is what I really, really wanted to talk to you about. And we're finally going to get to do it today.
So the final tribal council of Survivor Borneo took place on 420.
It did.
Wow. This explains so much about my college love of Survivor.
Yeah, and I think it also explains Greg Buis's jury question.
Okay. All right. Yeah, a lot of mysteries are explained here tonight. All right. So, Jordan, let's talk about this. Of course, I remember exactly where I was when I watched this, of course, which was in August of 2000. Had a big party at my house, had a lot of people over. Every Survivor fan I knew was over at my house, and we really were we bought coconuts at the store, had tiki torches in my living room. Talk about what went on April 20th, 2000.
All right, so this, you know,
because God knows I don't remember what I was doing on April 20th, 2000.
I was at sleepaway camp. I didn't even watch this whole season live. I had to binge watch it on VCR when I was sick during school after I realized how much I loved the show. But this is in this tribal council, one of the most memorable things, not only that's ever happened on Survivor, but that's happened in television history happened when Sue Hawk gave her speech. And it's really like a 3-part speech. The first part, you know, is when she's talking about Rich being arrogant, but she still respects him. And one of my favorite parts is when she calls Kelly Wigglesworth the rafting persona queen.
Yeah, you really sucked in that one when she talked about when Jervis beat her. And he never swam a day in his life, which I don't really know how that translates into rowing. Why Jervis is bad at rowing, because he's not a swimmer. I think that if you were not good at swimming, you'd probably want to be very proficient at rowing a boat.
I agree, but I think wasn't that Kelly's job? Wasn't she, you know, she was like a professional whitewater rafter or something, or a riverboat guide, something like that?
Yeah, but so, I don't think that's necessarily the same as rowing a boat.
No, it's a little bit different, but I mean, there are some things in the speech that, you know, Sue makes a lot, you know, there's a lot of, I guess, Sue Hawkisms where she sort of pronounces words wrong and where she doesn't get necessarily all the facts right, but it doesn't take away from the effect of the speech, obviously.
Fantastic.
it's absolutely amazing. And, you know, so she's going on about how she used to like Kelly and how, you know, Kelly used to be a lot sweeter than her. And she calls herself not a very openly nice person, which I think you could, you know, say is pretty true about Sue Hawk. But then she became a liar towards the end of the game. And the only time that Sue is interrupted during this long speech is just Kelly sitting there saying, interesting, after Sue said that she fails at life.
Yes. Yes. Well, that Kelly Wigglesworth did go further in her second chance than Sue Hawk did in her second chance.
That is true. And, you know, she went out, you know, maybe a lot more quietly than Sue Hawk did in her second chance. But I mean, you know, Richard kind of said it on last season, Kelly, despite going very far into the game her first time out and, you know, somewhat far into the game her second time out, isn't necessarily the best Survivor player of all time. But she made history by getting to the end of the first season.
Right. And I did really enjoy my time with Sue Hawk on the All-Stars, getting to annoy her quite a bit, talking about this quite a bit.
Did you ever get her to try to make a speech, like trying to see what animal you were on the island?
No. You know, I really found that those other survivors that were there with me on Chapara did not really appreciate my nostalgia for the seasons that they played on.
Really? That did not come off on Survivor All-Stars.
Yeah, because, you know, it's really annoying when people are talking about how great you are. That's really just something that really is very, very annoying to people. So many people, such an annoying habit that I have of giving them compliments of things they've done in their life.
They did seem to have fun during the fake tribal council, though.
Let's go back to the final tribal council. So what about the most famous part of this?
Okay, so there's really the part at the end when she gets, you know, the whole if I see you in real life and you're lying there dying of thirst, I would not get you a drink of water. I'd let the vultures take you and do whatever they want with you. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious what the vultures would want to do. They'd want to eat her. I don't see what else could, you know, she sort of leaves it up to interpretation, but I think that's what vultures do if you're dead of dehydration.
Those vultures, they'll do with you what they want.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the best part of this is when we get to the end. And I said it's like a three-part speech. You sort of have the first part, which sets everything up. You have the second part when she gives the whole dying of dehydration and how she's going to vote for Richard. The third part is the end. And this is I think this whole thing is my favorite thing that's ever happened on Survivor, this whole speech. And the end really just sums it up perfectly when she says, there's two things on this island. There's snakes and rats. Richard, you were the one who knowingly went after the prey. You're a snake. Kelly, you ran away from the snake. You're a rat. And in the end, we want the island spirits to do as they do and for the snake to eat the rat. And then you get this music. You just get her staring daggers into Kelly Wigglesworth, and it is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's a great moment. Great stuff. Yeah. TV history.
Absolutely. And you know, I wish I was able to watch this in a room with Survivor fans, but I didn't even know what the show was yet. But I did get to watch it when I was, you know, sick, not dying of dehydration, but yeah, just in bed and watching this on on VCR.
Okay. So, Jordan, what else happened this week in Survivor history?
So we're going to go to a moment in Survivor Tokenchines on April 23rd, 2009. That is 7 years ago this coming Saturday. While the other moment we just spoke about is, you know, maybe the most famous thing that's ever happened on the show, this is also a fun moment. And it's not fun, though, for our buddy Tyson, who was blindsided in Survivor Tokenchines.
Yes. Okay. Tyson 1.0 went out.
Yes, and you know, fun tribal council. Tyson thinks that Sierra is the one going out. He says that he loves everyone there except for Sierra. He even says he loves Brendan, who's on the jury. He has a confessional earlier in the episode where he wants Sierra to cry when he gets voted out because it's funny when people cry. But of course, he is the one. JT and Steven, actually Steven and Taj, are really the ones who come up with the plan to blindside Tyson instead of getting rid of Sierra, and it really obviously works out for them because JT and Steven get to the end of the game.
A lot of talk about Tyson being the big threat to win all the challenges, and that, mm-hmm, I think that was Tyson 1.0's plan, sort of the Joey Amazing plan of trying to win all these immunities along the way, and it takes a couple of tries out there, but Tyson eventually does end up learning what he's supposed to be doing out there.
Well, I mean, when the challenge is shuffleboard, is sort of anyone's game.
Very wet shuffleboard. One of the worst Survivor challenges I think they ever did on the show.
Yeah, not fun, and it's the first immunity challenge that Tyson doesn't win on that season, and of course it's when he gets voted out.
Yes, a sad story, but with a happy ending.
Yeah, he comes back, blood versus water. Well, not so happy middle, but definitely a happy ending.
And then an even happier ending when Tyson goes on to become one of the co-hosts of News AF.
News AF with Dominic.
All right.
Or maybe Anthony at that point.
Yeah, all right. That's what the A stands for. All right, Jordan, great stuff. We look forward to getting you back next week.
Yes, I'll talk to you next week.
All right.
Bye. You too.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Another week of This Week and Survivor History with our buddy Jordan Kalish. That's going to do it for us here today on the Exit Interview podcast, but that is not all the podcasting we're going to do today, because I'm going to be joined here in just a little bit by Shireen, who's coming into the studio. Looking forward to seeing her in person and talking about all of your questions and much, much more from this episode and this season of Survivor. And then we're going to get into the voicemails with our friend Scott Green, who, if you haven't checked it out today, was going to be at the taping or was at the taping of the Price is Right episode, which came on today. So I'm going to also check that to see if anything interesting happened. And we will talk with him about all of the action and take your voicemail. Go ahead and get your calls in. robiswebsite.com/voicemail or 323-282-RHAP. Looking forward to hearing your comments on robiswebsite.com. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.